Welcome to the Geek to Geek podcast, where the floor may be made of non-floor substances. I'm Void, and I'm here with my co-host, Beej.
Ah, my feet! Okay. I won!
You legitimately got me for the first time in a long time. Wow, that was good. Today we're talking about action reality shows, because I didn't know what else to call these things. But this was kicked off because of The Floor is Lava. So,
right.
I watched The Floor is Lava with my kids just over the last few weeks, like basically over the summer. It was something that we didn't binge watch. We watched as a family. Every couple nights we would sit down and watch like one or two episodes. And that was about perfect, right? Because we could just like zone in for half an hour or an hour as a family, pick someone to cheer for and like cheer for this stupid dumb game that we love that was like fun. Like it's dumb fun, but in the best kind of, I say dumb in the lovingest way possible, right? For this.
In the way that I love stuff. Like I love Fast and the Furious because it is dumb.
Yeah.
And I love it.
And it was great. And like we had such a good time and it was a good couple weeks of like picking away at a TV show as a family. And then it's over. And now if they come out with another season of it next year or 2 years down the line, we'll absolutely watch it again as a family. And it just got me thinking about like this genre of TV. And I feel like this might be a shorter episode because I don't know how much we have to say about it, but I had to bring it up as something to talk about. So
yeah,
let's start with The Floor is Lava. Have you seen it?
I have not. I've only seen a clip from The Soup, and so that is completely out of context. I've not seen this at all. And thinking about it now with us doing this tonight, that might be something I want to put on and watch tonight. I didn't even think about doing it beforehand. When I get done with this, I may go watch The Floor is Lava just because it's dumb.
It is. It's fun, right? Like, they enter a room on one side, they have to get to the other side of the room, and it's basically an adult-sized obstacle course that has a bunch of red water in it that they have to act like it's lava. And there are traps, there are booby traps, there are like buttons they can hit or ropes they can untie that'll like change the environment. And it's just, you know, it's this action type of reality show where it's real people reacting to this environment they've been put into and trying to get to the other side. And it's really fun. And like they lean in to the dumb fun of it, because one of the rules that they never explicitly say, but if you watch the whole season the way we did, you quickly realize that if a contestant ever has more than just like their feet casually touch the water, they have to act like it's lava and fall in all of the way. So
okay,
you'll see people where you're like, oh, you could totally recover from the position you're in right now, but because their legs are dangling like halfway in the water, they have to like let go and like give themselves like a scream, like a like it's so funny.
Because it's lava.
Yeah, because it's lava, exactly.
And I was curious about that too, like with it being water, and here's where I am being that guy with The Floor is Lava. Because the viscosity of lava and water are entirely different, how do they handle splashes? How, like when water will splash up on them, do they actually have to treat it like it's lava and like not use that leg or something?
No, they have a bunch of like air cannons in it, so they actually splash on the contestants a lot, almost as part of the game to like distract.
Okay.
So it's only if you like fall into it that they act like that.
Okay. Because I was curious, because I like this could lead to some really interesting like rules that like you can't hop on your left leg because you got lava burned through all of it. Like that could be weird, or it could just be something like that where that's like, you just don't need to fall into the lava, kid.
Yeah. So it was really fun. And it's just like, it's one of these things that's like a light genre of TV that, if you're in the right headspace, you can really embrace it and just have fun with it. And I know that Netflix has other ones like this, like Ultimate Beastmaster. I think I watched a season of that, but like before I had kids or right when they were really young. But I mentioned that. I was like, oh, we could watch this as a family. And both my kids were like, oh, we've already watched that. It was really good. So I was like, well,
oh, really?
There goes that idea. But, you know, they had fun with it. So that was another one I think of. But like, do you have any of the ones in this genre that like jump out to you as one that stuck out or is your favorite or that you enjoyed?
Honestly, probably the original Japanese Ninja Warrior Sasuke was my favorite one of any of these that I've seen in a like forever. Like outside of the ones we grew up with, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Like the one that I like the most. I've never seen Ultimate Beastmaster. Like that one is kind of an American Gladiators kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like a Ninja Warrior-y type thing like that.
It's kind of, it reminds me of the tone of American Gladiators, but the actual moment-to-moment of it is definitely more like Ninja Warrior.
Okay. So I haven't seen it. I've just seen the trailers for it. But one of my favorite ones is the original Ninja Warrior, Sasuke in Japanese, in Japan, because of the contestants. Like, the contestants made that one for me. And they're what really make a show like this, one of these action game shows for me. Because if I don't like the people who I'm watching and I think they kind of suck, then I'm not going to want to watch or root for them. And so Ninja Warrior, the thing about it, all the people were just so nice. There was like this really athletic fisherman who kept coming year after year and like just beating, and they're like, hey, it's the ninja fisherman, and everybody's like, they're happy about it. And those people, the best part about it, the reason I like it, is that even when somebody failed, even when somebody like did not get it, or if somebody beat somebody else, everybody was nice about it. Like, there was very rarely that kind of thing that happens in American Ninja Warrior and American game shows where they get mad when they fail, where they just get ragey, like they're like, oh no, and just like, and really angry. All of the ones on the original one were just like, oh well, I tried and I gave it my best shot, and like, we're doing this for fun. And that was why I like
non-American style in a good way.
It is in a good way. Yeah, that's one of those things where I like the Japanese one better than the American one, mainly because of the way that people don't take it nearly as seriously. Even the people who take it seriously don't take it American seriously, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I totally do. I know I've talked about it before, so I'm not gonna go too far down this path. But MasterChef America is a show that, like, my wife and I watched a couple seasons. We're like, oh, we like this. And then we found out that there are MasterChefs all around the world, and we started downloading those. We're not going to talk about the legality of how, but if you start watching the MasterChefs from elsewhere around the world, you realize that they're so much better because they're not all about competition and rivalry. It's really about, like, having a good time and becoming friends with each other. And like you said, you know, you're kind of happy that you got to compete, and you get to meet some people as you're competing, and that's what the show becomes about. It's never about winning, or never purely about winning. Whereas American TV is all about, where's the conflict? Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? So yeah, I definitely like that tone better than the American style.
Yeah, so if y'all have never seen the original Ninja Warrior, y'all should really go look it up. Like, it's great. There have been years where on Jennifer's birthday, all she wanted to do was watch Ninja Warrior. Like, that was what she wanted to do. She wanted to come home from work, order takeout, and sit and watch Ninja Warrior marathons. And because she just liked seeing these people do this stuff. And so I like these kinds of game shows. I always have. Like, you and I were talking about when the Jedi Temple Challenge came out a few months ago, where it just brought back all of these memories of stuff that we watched as kids. Like, this is something that goes back to, I know it, people who are almost 40, like, I know it goes back to at least then.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like, Jedi Temple Challenge is actually the reason that I ended up giving The Floor is Lava a shot. Because that came out, and I watched the first, like, three or four episodes with my kids, and we had a lot of fun with that. You know, like, cheering on these other kids, picking a team to root for, and even if they get knocked out, you're like, oh, okay, we'll root for the other team. Like, we just had a good time with it, right? And the Jedi Temple Challenge was interesting. Like, it seems like the characters, like, not the kids in it, but the other characters are actual canon to the Star Wars universe, which I thought was really cool that they did that. And the game overall is basically just like Legends of the Hidden Temple, but with a Star Wars skin on top of it. And the AD is like the name of the droid, something like AD. Mm-hmm. And it's just a snarky commentator the whole time. And I just loved it. I loved it so much. And there's this whole temptation of the dark side thing in the final challenge where they try to lure the kids into like saying, yes, I accept the dark side. And then you get like a free pass through the challenge you're stuck on, but it makes the next challenge harder. And so, like, just working in all of these Star Wars canon-y things into it made me really happy. And then the other thing I loved about Jedi Temple Challenge was that the Jedi Master for it, like, basically the game show host, but he's a Jedi Master in this, is Ahmed Best, who, if you don't recognize that name, that's Jar Jar Binks. And Jar Jar Binks, Ahmed Best specifically, not Jar Jar the character, but Ahmed Best has just gotten so much hate over the years for playing Jar Jar Binks as a character, and he doesn't deserve it. He did such a good job with what he was given, And you have to remember that, like, that character pioneered digital CG actors in a way that nothing else ever had before.
No, and, like, it ruined his career. That he went through severe depressions where he was suicidal at times because of just how he had ruined his life by doing Star Wars and being Jar Jar. So it really surprised me. That's why whenever I saw him, he looked familiar, but I didn't recognize him. And the reason that it never even crossed my mind that it would be Ahmed Best is because he was so... down because of Star Wars. It had done taken such a toll on his life. I wouldn't have expected him to come back to Star Wars. Like, that was something like I did not expect. So I'm excited that he's been able to move forward in life and really accept where he is and get to the get to this where, you know, now he's a Jedi Master. You know, they gave him, they kind of redeemed not him, because he did a fantastic job as Jar Jar. Like, that motion capture and CG character is great. Like, but he's a Jedi Master now, so it's like, what are people going to make fun of for that?
Yeah, I'm just so happy that they were able to get him back into Star Wars in a new role, and he got to actually be, like, an in-canon Jedi Master. And at the same time, you can tell he's legitimately having a good time being the game show host and, like, walking the kids through everything, and that it's just, like, a good fit for him. So that made me happy seeing that show, too. So those were kind of, like, the two more recent ones that jumped out to me were, you know, Floor's Lava and Jedi Temple Challenge. But... like you mentioned, there's a bunch of these from our childhood, and those are worth mentioning, too.
Like, I loved these when I was a kid. The one that actually, like, Legends of the Hidden Temple, we've mentioned before, was, yeah, I think, the one that everybody loved. Like, I don't know hardly anyone. I think my wife maybe didn't watch it, but she didn't have cable, and I only got to watch it at my grandpa's house. But it was one that I adored because of the kids getting to run through the end, run through these ruins, and like, be Indiana Jones, basically. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But American Gladiators was the one that really got me. Like, that was the one that I tuned in for every single time.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I feel like Legends of the Hidden Temple was a touchstone for 90s kids, but then as soon as you get beyond that, it's kind of different person by person. So I have some that jumped out to me, but what was it about American Gladiators that, like, stuck out for you?
I don't know what it was about American Gladiators. It was these ridiculous characters that they had. So, I mean, it was like that professional wrestling thing where they had these people that were doing it. But I really liked the games. I remember watching those games and thinking that they would be fun. Like the sparring where they have like the big, they're like bow staffs, but they have like big padding on the sides where they can hit each other. And it's like they were sparring on these platforms trying to knock each other off and like climbing up just different what look like now like bouncy houses for kids' birthday parties, but they were these soft obstacle courses, like just climbing up and around them, like trying to shoot people with the gladiators were shooting at the contestants with like a tennis ball cannon.
Oh, yeah,
while they
I
were
remember.
Trying to run through, like using all of these shields, like they were just ridiculous enough that it's like I would love to do that sometime. Like, you watch it and it's like Legends of the Hidden Temple, like as a kid, you know you're never going to get on Nickelodeon and be able to do that. It's like, that would be awesome, but I'm never going to get to do it. But then you see somebody on American Gladiators get a tennis ball cannon fired at them while they're hiding behind some plastic, and you're like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do.
Wow, that's
like,
cool.
I just loved it.
I know one of the ones you added here that I had completely forgotten about its existence was Nick Arcade. But I watched that show a ton when I was a kid. That was fun, too.
I forgot what it was called. I had to look up. The reason I have a YouTube link here in our notes, and I'm going to share in the actual show notes, is because this was the one where the kids got to be in a video game at the end of yep. it, the obstacle course. When you're watching it on TV, you're watching them play like an old 8-bit video game. And I ate this up. I didn't remember what it was called. I do not remember what the game actually was that they were playing normally. But there is a link that I found that's this mini documentary about it and how they did the video game stuff. So I'm excited to watch that myself because I found like 15 minutes before we recorded. But that was one of my favorites. Nick Arcade, whenever I had a chance to watch that one, I watched it, but I couldn't remember the name of it. But so, it was so interesting.
I think that in that one, didn't they actually like play real arcade games for the first couple rounds? And then if you made it to the final round, they played that like virtual one where they were like green screened or something crazy.
Oh yeah, maybe right? They did.
But I think at first it was literally just like they played arcade games, because I remember watching that and being like, oh, I want to play that video game. Like I think that was part of the appeal just as a 90s kid.
Oh man, now I'm gonna really have to go look up some episodes of it. Like that documentary I've got my link to is like, yeah, I want to see what games they played. Like I had completely forgotten what the actual first part of that was. That's awesome.
Yeah, another one that jumped out to me from that period was Double Dare, and this was one mm-hmm. that I feel like it was never a show I tuned in for to like watch Double Dare, but it was something that would come on and I would leave the TV on and it would be okay. Like it was one that. It seemed fun to watch and be like, oh, like I could, you know, if we were there, you could do that as a family, like at the Nickelodeon studios.
Right.
And I don't know. I enjoyed that because it was like a family bonding thing. It was always like on the gross end, though. So it didn't super appeal to me. But I do know Double Dare is just classic from that era.
And it's great. Like we saw it live a couple of years ago. That was part of, I think, our Christmas present to each other was going to see Double Dare live in Nashville. And it was great. It was just as good as it was when we were kids, being able to see these kids do this ridiculous stuff, like climb through pancakes and pick the nose and just do all of this. It was fantastic. And it really made me remember how much I loved watching that as a kid. Like that kind of action game show was like Double Dare really kind of epitomizes it for me.
Yeah. So my favorite was always Guts. I loved Guts. It was just like the aggro Craig was amazing. It was like one of the best things I'd ever seen on TV, right? Like, can you win the aggro Craig? Because that's what it always came down to, right? They never really eliminated teams. It ultimately like gave you a penalty or like a handicap on that final round of trying to beat the aggro Craig. And so that's what every episode came down to. It was like, can you beat the aggro Craig or not? And something about that just appealed to me and it just clicked in my brain. And I liked all the things leading up to it because they were always like, they were like athletic and like sporty challenges. And I was never a super, I mean, you know, big surprise here. If you guys have heard me talk for the last five seasons, I was never a super sporty or athletic kid. but you know, I always appreciate like, specific skills within a sport. So like I would do things like I would just go out on the driveway and I would shoot like baskets, like, you know, in a basketball mm-hmm. hoop that we had. Or like there was a while where I was into, like, I was, you know, quote unquote into like street hockey. But for me, what that meant was I would set up a hockey net and I would like go out on our side slab in our yard and I would just like hit like street hockey balls into the net over and over for hours. Or like, you know, take a tennis racket and just like try to keep a ball like volleying against the side of our garage. Like these are the kind of things that appeal to me in sports. And something about Guts was like, that was the type of games that they had at the core of that show, where it was like a subset skill from something that was athletic, but it wasn't actually like team competitive games in the same way that like traditional sports is. So I really liked it. I liked the way they framed it up.
And I remember specifically one game on there that I always, like, whenever I think of Guts, I don't actually think of the crag that they're climbing, the aggro crag. I think of this weird cube that they had to crawl through that was just crisscrossed bungee cords. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
like,
I
that
do.
One looked so much fun. And, like, them, I don't know even how to describe, like, what it feels like to watch that, but it's like, I want to do that. Like, that seems like it's just ridiculous enough. Like that's what I think about with Guts all the time. Whenever I think, you know, all those conversations, you know, where I'm sitting, I was like, thinking about Nintendo or Nickelodeon Guts? It's like, but whenever it is brought up like that kind of thing, it's that picture of the bungee cord, like barrier, that cube.
Yeah. Oh man. So anyway, we don't really have a point to this topic except that it came up and I wanted to talk about it. So there you go. If you haven't checked out The Floor is Lava on Netflix, you and like any of this rings a bell from your childhood or it just sounds interesting, absolutely go watch The Floor is Lava because it is worth your time. Yeah. With that being said, we are part of a network. So don't forget, we have podcasts, we have streamers, we have the Geekery blog, all that and more at geektogeekmedia.com/subscribe. And then you can get it sent right to you. Is there anything else new going on with Patreon?
I don't have any idea. We're recording this early. So you can always go to geektogeekmedia.com/Patreon and check it out. It is an exclusive. It is full of exclusive content now. There are some that you can check out for that's open to the public to see what we offer. And consider becoming a subscriber. You support the writers of the content to get more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, it's time for Weekly Geekery, where we share what we've been geeking out about this week. What do you have for Geekery this week?
We watched the documentary Howard on Disney Plus. Have you watched that yet?
No, it's on my list and I'm excited to check it out.
It is so good. It's about Howard Ashman, the lyricist behind like every major Disney movie from our childhood. The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast. Like the guy is a genius. And they don't shy away in this documentary. I'm really proud of them. They don't really shy away from him dying from AIDS. That I was wondering how they would handle it being a Disney made documentary that's airing on Disney Plus. And they went straight in talking about it very candidly and what it was like for people who were living in the 80s, like dealing with it before really people knew what it was. So I was really, really proud that they didn't gloss over it and showed how him having the disease affected his work and his interaction with his coworkers and things like that. And just it was compelling and moving, and I cannot recommend it enough. Like, it's one that Jennifer was looking forward to, and when we found out that it was out already, went and watched it like the next day.
Cool.
It's so good.
Yeah, I definitely need to watch that because, like you said, he's responsible for like so many of the iconic songs from that golden age of Disney musicals, essentially from like 1989, I think is where The Little Mermaid kicks off, through the early 2000s or late 90s. He had either direct influence on a lot of those from like the late 80s and early 90s. And then like even after his death, he had done a pre-work on a lot of the ones that even went into like the late 90s and early 2000s. So, yeah.
So one thing I learned about this that I didn't know about Howard Ashman is that he is the reason Little Shop of Horrors is a musical. Like he did the script, the treatment for the play and the film. Had no idea that he was the reason that we have a Feed Miss Seymour. I did not know.
Interesting. I didn't know that either. Cool.
Yeah,
okay.
I love it.
And I gotta watch it.
I love that. Yeah, you have to. It's great.
Cool. I watched a couple movies. Actually, I played a game that I can hit on really quick because I don't have a ton to say about it. But I got Forager on Game Pass. And Forager was like, I don't know, it's really interesting. It's like a crafting game that just has these like tight little crafting loops. And it's all this top-down perspective and kind of cutesy. But there's a lot of game there underneath it. And it was one where, if you have ever played like kind of the crafty survival-y game, it's not super into the survival side, more on the crafting, right, building side, and that kind of game appeals to you, you might want to take a look at Forager, especially if you have Game Pass, just because I booted it up one night to try it, and then I, like 5 hours later, just came out of the zone that I was in and realized how much time I had spent with it. So I had a really just fun night with that lasted for way longer than I thought it would.
Is that a game you'll go back to?
No, I don't think so. So that's, again, why it's a quick hit. Like, it's just not my type of genre, but there's definitely something there in the core gameplay loop that appealed to me when I was in the zone for it. So I think if that is your type of game, you could find a lot of enjoyment there.
And it's pretty. Like, I've seen this one a lot on Steam and on the Switch eShop, where it is bright color pixel art. And I haven't played it, but I know that I look at it and be like, man, that game is my kind of art style.
Yeah, it is pretty, for sure. And then outside of that, I've been watching other movies, too. So I know you just talked about one. I watched Marriage Story on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it was
That's intense, man.
It was really good, but it was also like really intense. Like it's and I don't even know how to say it. It's like an adult movie, but not like that. It's like a right. movie made for adults, right? Like
for grown-ups,
the themes
yeah.
and the subject matter are ones that are interesting to adults in the world, and it's like it's truly a drama, right? It's like one of those that feels like people would call Oscar bait, where it's mm-hmm. not really like an action or like, oh, this huge new concept. It's a story of this marriage where the couple is in the process of separating and getting a divorce, and you follow them through that, and they never like hate each other during it. It's not about like who's in the right, who's in the wrong, because it really shows you both sides of it throughout the whole thing and yep. how situations can just kind of spiral. And in the end, it ends on a note where you don't feel horrible about anything, but it's definitely an intense movie with a lot of emotions. Yep. But it's very well acted, and it was really well done, and it's probably one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Yeah, it is one of the it's one of the best movies I've seen this year. That's a really good way to put it, where it's not the kind of movie that I'll seek out very often, where it's something I know that is going to make me feel that intensely and have that intense of a reaction to it.
Yeah,
but it having Adam Driver in it really, really helped. Like, I really like him as an actor, not just because he's Kylo Ren, but in everything I've ever seen him in, like, he is a fantastic actor. And so we wanted to watch it, and I'm blanking right now on who plays his wife.
Scarlett Johansson,
yeah. And it surprised me on just how their chemistry made it more intense.
Yeah, like, it worked.
When
it totally
they were
works.
Together, it totally works. And I don't know, that movie was, like you said, it's not a feel-good movie. It's not, and it doesn't make you, when it ends, you don't really feel bad. It's just like, wow, that happened, and I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
It is absolutely worth seeing.
It was. It was one that made me think for a while, but in a good
yeah,
way. Like, it was good.
Yeah, in the good way.
Yeah. And then the other one I wanted to call out as a movie I watched lately was Greyhound, which I don't know. Have you seen this one?
I don't think I know this one. No.
Okay. So this is the Tom Hanks movie that was going to release, but then COVID happened and no movies have come out in theaters. So something with the rights of this one moved over to Apple Plus. So it's on like Apple TV Plus, Apple, whatever they call it, you know, their Apple subscription.
Right.
And it is, I think it's the best depiction of World War II naval battles that I've ever seen. It's really interesting. So the core premise is that there's the crossing of the Atlantic Ocean, right? And they go across the area that they call it the Pit. And it's basically between air support from the United States and when you can get air support from Great Britain. And that area in between, you're essentially on your own crossing the ocean, right? Because this is the 1940s and air support only goes so far. And so there's this like multiple day period as they're crossing the ocean where like they are protecting a convoy of troops and supplies and all of the things that need to get over to the theater of war in Europe. And so it follows Tom Hanks as the captain who is in charge of he's not the admiral of the whole convoy, but he's like in charge of the group that's protecting the convoy. So he's kind of like in charge of the small subset of ships that is doing the patrols and like defending. And it follows him for essentially like 50 or 60 hours right in the middle of it between when they lose air support and when they get air support again. And as they're being like harassed by a bunch of U-boats, you know, so submarines. It's just like, after having watched this one, I feel like every other depiction of a World War II naval battle I've ever seen is so simplified and not accurate, because this actually shows like the captain and like what he's doing and how he's making the calls, but it also shows the rest of the crew and the bridge crew and how like even through everything that's going on in battles, they all have to just stand at their post and they aren't really allowed to move because that's how it works. Because a ship is a gigantic machine that takes so many people to operate. And it actually gives you a sense of the fact that like, oh yeah, these people are doing a job. They have to rotate in and out of these positions. So even though the captain stays on the bridge, like the other people around him rotate because they have to take a break. They have to go eat. They have to sleep so they can come back, you know, a couple shifts from then. And something about it just like made the reality of naval battles in World War II more real for me than anything else ever has. And on top of that, it's just a good movie too. So I had to call that one out because it was great. Like Greyhound was just, it was a really good movie.
I can't imagine that it's bad. Like I can think on one hand of how many bad Tom Hanks movies I've seen.
Yeah.
Like they may not all be, you know, blockbuster stuff that I want to watch over and over and over again, but I can't think of many bad ones. So, I mean, while this isn't my kind of movie because it's a war film, I can absolutely see it being a fantastic film.
Oh, yeah. Tom Hanks is good for sure.
Yeah, pretty much anything. Yep.
That's probably it for this week. You guys can write to us with comments, suggestions, or feedback. Our email address is geek2geekcast@gmail.com or reach us on Twitter @geek2geekcast.
We also have great discussions on Slack, Discord, and Reddit. You can go to geek2geekmedia.com for invite links. While you're there, make sure you check out all the other content on the network. We have a lot of new stuff like blogs and video game reviews and a whole lot more.
I blog at agreenmushroom.com and you can find me at grnmushroom. That's green mushroom without the E's on Twitter. I'm also on the Disney Forever podcast where we watch and react to a different Disney movie every week.
And I'm on Twitter as @ProfessorBeej. That's Beej with two E's. And I also co-host the Dragon Quest FM podcast, a show about the Square Enix RPG series.
We've been Void and Beej with your Geek to Geek podcast. I'll do it for this week. See you next week, geeks.
Bye, lava!
When toxic culture has you down.
When you're just looking to laugh and have fun.
Kick back and enjoy watching a video game.
Or just make some new friends.
It's time to visit the Geek to Geek Media Network.
A community of podcasters, streamers, and bloggers.
Well, more of a family than a community.
All dedicated to geeking out about the things we love. Things like
video games.
Star Wars. Beep, beep, beep,
beep, beep, beep. Comics.
Movies.
K-pop.
Disney Plus.
Keanu Reeves.
New.
Or whatever our community decides is the next best thing.
That's right. We have a great online community on Slack and Discord where we chat about our weekly geekery with listeners and viewers.
And each other.
Yep, and each other in real time. And we can't wait for you to join us.
So come check us out at geek2geekmedia.com.
And escape toxic fandom for something much more...
Keanu?
Yes, Keanu.